Welcome to the next episode of Flint Coat Talks. It's your boy Dano. I'm here in the Austin recording studio, and this morning I have a special guest, Dr. Karen Bredbord. Karen, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me here today. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. We're so excited to have you here. I'm excited to talk to you about a bunch of different topics today. But first, tell us about your role for the enterprise.
Sure. I'll tell you about that in a sec. I just want to say thank you for having this podcast.
You bet.
I know that it is that it's really your effort and a grassroots effort to spread the word on mental health.
Absolutely.
And on just well-being in general, because we're human beings who work. So when I found out about this podcast, I couldn't be happier. So
awesome. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. In terms of my role, so as you know, I'm, you know, the title is Chief Talent Officer. Mm-hmm. It can mean different things in different companies. Mm-hmm. Certainly for us, what the role really means, I believe, is a focus on development and on people. And this really speaks to the commitment that senior leadership has for its people, about its people. And so my charge is really a combination of individual development. And when I say individual development, it's not just about, you know, becoming a better leader, although that's certainly key to it. It has to do with succession planning, right, as well. But it also has to do with a whole person, the whole person, right? My role also focuses on teams and team development. As we know, you can have the best and brightest coming together, but if you can't get along, if you can't communicate,
yes,
it can be a problem,
we
right?
We could talk all day about that, I think.
We'll talk about that later maybe, yeah, right?
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. So,
And I would say one other thing, it's organizational development, which is really about that mental health push, but it's about culture. It's about making the Alberici enterprise, all the operating companies within it, a real employer of choice, mm-hmm. and our commitment to do that through taking care of our people.
I love to hear that, because our people is our greatest asset, right?
Exactly.
What would the enterprise be without the 2,000 some odd people that work here or choose to work here every day, right? I mean, we're overflowing with opportunity, even here in Central Texas.
Sure.
Billions and billions of dollars worth of work. And it's definitely, we want to be the employer of choice for the people that want that type of atmosphere that's important to them. So,
exactly. And so we take culture extremely seriously, and it's always in the making.
Absolutely. And there's things that build it up and tear it down just as easy, right? So before we get into all of this, tell me a little bit about your road in psychology and being a psychologist, that kind of stuff.
Sure, sure. Here I'm going to just be really authentic, right? I mean, there's so many reasons that we end up doing what we do, right? Certainly, I think there were factors in my life, both that just what I was born into, as well as experiences that I've had that made me choose the road to psychology. I grew up in a family of healthcare providers, doctors, nurses. And so the helping professions is what I saw on a day-to-day. People going out there, right? It was a regular situation where my father was called into the hospital, right? So that was really front and center for me around helping people. My parents came from two very different cultures. My mother's from Israel. My father's from the United States. Mm-hmm. As a child, I would spend my summers in Israel. And so very early on, I became very aware of cultural differences, right?
Oh, wow.
How in the U.S. Things were done a certain way, but in Israel, things were done very differently. Even the way people interacted, right? When I was growing up, Israel was a very collectivistic country, right? Where everybody was in each other's business kind of a thing. And in our country, right, there were some neighborhoods where you didn't even know who you lived next door to. So very different kinds of ways of being, interacting. That very much impacted me. My grandmother was a Holocaust survivor.
Oh, my goodness.
She lost her whole family. She was courageous and escaped. At the time, it was Palestine, right? So she begged her family to come with her. They didn't. And they, unfortunately, were killed by the Nazis. She had to start over. I was very aware of her experience of losing everything and having to start over again. And of course, this profoundly affected her mental health, affected all of us in turn. But it was also a picture of resilience. And what happens when difficult things, very difficult things, traumatic things happen, and how people can go from losing everything to rebuilding. And that was extremely inspiring. And a message here, right, around Alberisi and the enterprise, when we talk about mental health, we're not just talking about, you know, being aware and helping people who are in need, distress. But it's also, mental health is also about going from just good to great. Mm-hmm. It's also optimizing behavior, optimizing potential. So as a child, it was front and center for me. Also another factor, I happened to, you know, have had some friends as a child who lost parents, like multiple friends who lost parents to health-related issues. Mm. So loss, again, front and center for me. Interestingly, though, I didn't initially decide to become a clinician. I thought I just wanted to go the organizational psych route. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, because I wasn't ready yet. Mm-hmm. I wasn't ready to become a clinician. So I wanted to apply psychology, but from more of a cultural standpoint. And there was a point where I was like, I don't know if I want to become a psychologist or I want to go to into international relations, right? Diplomacy. Yeah. So it was, and ultimately, obviously, you know what I chose. Yeah. But so there were various factors, obviously, at play that led me to choose to do what I do.
It's an incredible story to think about your parents being people that served, right? That were all about the well-being of others. And your grandmother, my goodness, what a testament to how she's impacted, I mean, how many generations, right? Just by her resiliency, being able to rebuild, and that's instilled and been inspired in you, and how many people you've been able to touch. That's an incredible story. How wonderful. In Israel.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so in Israel, like, where did y'all go? Like, when you were there over the summer, like, where was, what was the home place?
Such a good question. The home place was Jerusalem, actually.
Oh, wow.
But Israel is a small country,
it is.
Right? It's like, you know, smaller than New Jersey, right? So I was all over Israel ultimately in the summers because there was family all over. There was family in kibbutzes, which, talk about a collectivistic way of living, right? You know, waking up in the summers because it was so hot at 3 a.m. to pick mangoes. I mean, some of my fondest memories as a teen, right? But it was you know, just a very interesting upbringing and a very different time, mm-hmm. obviously. It was still a time when I was a child where the possibility of Israel was still focused, mm-hmm. you know,
sure.
And so we're in a tough circumstance right now with things that have, you know, reemerged, but yeah.
Yeah, we took a family trip there last summer, and I remember going through Jerusalem and my kids walking through the downtown market. Like, didn't realize that people live that way. They were like, what do you mean they don't have refrigerators and they go to the market every day to buy food and sing? I remember we're outside of Jerusalem one day on the way to Caesarea, possibly, and like we passed a guy that was clearly a shepherd. He was on his donkey and he was corralling these sheep. And my son was like, Dad, what's that guy doing? I was like, that's his job, bro. Like, he's a shepherd. Like, he's like, where's he going to find food for those sheep here in the desert? I was
exactly.
like, that's his job, you know, and for him to make that connection of, wow, everybody doesn't just get up and get on a bus and go to school or get a car when they turn 16 and get a job. Like, you know, this guy was probably 14 years old and he had already, you know, graduated into manhood, and he was the chief shepherd of the family. So
right, and it's such an interesting country, right? Because not that this is about Israel, but certainly it has a very high tech industry too.
Oh, yeah.
So you have all types of, talk about diversity, people leading very different ways of life in a very small geographical area, mm-hmm. right? So you get to see a lot.
Well, I'm thankful for that time for you and how that shaped you and has led you here to the Flanco Alberisi enterprise. And I'm really excited now that you're, what, 6 months in?
Well, 6 months in my in-house official mm-hmm. role, but I've been working with the enterprise for about 3 years at this point.
Wow, yeah.
So I didn't just kind of come in, right?
It
was a few years in the making. And so I was working across the enterprise with senior leadership mm-hmm. around people strategy, people related, topics. And given the direction and the focus, the continued focus on people, right, it made sense for there to be somebody else there. And mm-hmm. so this role was created. Obviously, I work in conjunction with human resources. Mm-hmm. We absolutely still have a human resource function. It's just a partnership with HR looking at, we have a long history of assessment in this company, right, in this enterprise. And so that's a part of the role as well as really honing in on that team and cultural piece.
Absolutely. I was reading your bio and kind of your job description on the Alvarisi website this morning, to be completely honest. And I read things like, shaping comprehensive people strategy, organizational development, employee wellness, positive organizational culture. And I thought, was this a position that existed 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago in construction companies? Or does it even exist in other companies except ours?
It's a really good question. And I think that those areas are usually sprinkled throughout, because at the end of the day, culture is made by the people, right? And certainly I think human resources would say we've been involved in this to some degree. And yes, they have. But somebody who comes in with a background as a psychologist, both an organizational and clinical psychologist, I think that is definitely innovative, mm-hmm. right? Again, it's a focus on the whole person. At the end of the day, no one can develop effectively if they themselves aren't well. And even people who are performing very well, the question is, how can we do it better? And how can we help optimize human performance mm-hmm. so there's a win-win both for the person and for the organization.
As I listen to you talk and read this description, I think of, being a 20-year veteran of working in the field, these are all challenges I've had along the way, like worrying about my employees, worrying about my direct yeah. reports, worrying about having this positive culture, worried about how we're going to grow people, right? You talk about the whole person, but how you're going to grow somebody, because just like your grandmother left a legacy in you, like we have the opportunity to leave a legacy for the people that work with us, for us. And how do you shape those people so that when they go to the next job, they're going to be an asset?
Exactly. And I think as a leader, right, as a manager, when people aren't necessarily performing, or that somebody could do even, actualize even more, you see the possibilities in them, right? Mm-hmm. How can you either move obstacles or remove obstacles that may be in the environment, right? Or help them become self-aware, right, around something that could be blocking their effectiveness, right? Mm. And that's one of the great, I think, responsibilities of a leader, is to really see what's going on, both from the person and the environment, right? Because mm-hmm. B equals P plus E. Behavior equals the person plus the environment. It's a very Lewinian concept, right? Kurt Lewin. Thinking about as a leader, stepping back, getting on the balcony, looking at your team, looking at the people, and seeing what's happening and what you can possibly do mm-hmm. To help facilitate performance.
Absolutely. I think back to a conversation we had with Kevin Grimwood with APG.
Yeah. I know Kevin. Yes. Hey, Kevin, if you're listening.
Kevin, what's up, man? But we talked maybe about a year ago, really, about the fixed mindset versus growth mindset,
yes.
right? And this optimization
yep.
of people, and like how, when you're in the fixed mindset, what is your job like? And what is it like for the people working around you versus what it's like when you're in the growth mindset, right?
Exactly. And, shifting from the fixed to the growth often involves challenging your own assumptions, right? Mm. Because we often, in the absence of information, we will fill in the blanks. We'll come up with stories to explain. That's the way the human mind works. Sometimes those assumptions, those stories aren't always correct, right? And so stepping back and saying, why am I thinking that this way, right? And then challenging sometimes those assumptions. And then when we challenge those assumptions and then we behave differently, sometimes we see a very different outcome. Maybe not immediately, but over time.
There's so much wrapped up in that statement. Like, I'm trying to even figure out where to go. But I mean, challenging the assumptions in the absence of information, yeah, leading you to filling in the blanks, was kind of leading to the next question that I want to talk about, is like challenges that face us in construction today.
Sure.
Right. And some of that is the ability to communicate. Is that an issue that you see that lives in the construction industry?
It's not just
industry?
Construction. It's every industry, right?
Okay, I'm so glad to hear that.
Anytime people, right? And people are together, right? It could be even hospitals, right? It could be talking back to that healthcare model. Like, it's everywhere. It is everywhere. But certainly what makes construction, construction as a culture, is it's an incredibly hard, like, diligent, right? Talk about hard working. There's a lot of purpose behind construction, right? You're building. By the way, there's a lot of parallels, I often say, and my husband's in the industry too, by the way,
okay,
between building buildings or bridges or whatever it is you're building and building people, right? There are processes in place. But I would say that the people who enter construction, oftentimes very passionate, very dedicated, very hardworking, and, you know, that focus on the outcome can sometimes, that the process can sometimes get forgotten. So it's not just what you have to do, but the how you're communicating and getting it done, yeah, right? And unfortunately, I don't know any other way but communication. And it does take time. And sometimes, you know, people have so much on their plate and it's like, I just got to get to that next thing, got to get to that next thing. And that list just never ends. And what happens is that people think they communicated something, but, you know, as Kevin and our APG friends will say, you're right, communication sent is not necessarily communication received.
Amen.
Right? Yes. Right? And so taking the time to really make sure that, right, that has happened, that appropriate exchange of information has happened, is important. At the end of the day, you know, we're also, though, we're complex as humans, and there are feelings there. I know nobody likes to talk about feelings, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and construction being a male-centric culture, right? I don't think, by the way, from a social perspective, this is where men, thankfully, it's changing. It's mm-hmm. changing. Where, and certainly our schools are changing, where social emotional learning is in the mix, right? My male child has been learning about feelings since kindergarten, right? Thankfully, right?
Yeah.
But whereas his father, right, my husband, that wasn't part of the community, that wasn't part of the educational model at the time, right?
Yeah.
But I've got to say that this is where men have, you know, had their own oppression per se, is mm-hmm. where feelings haven't been allowed to be, first of all, allowing men to express their feelings. So without, or even be made aware of what they're feeling necessarily, right? Again, this is changing, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but from a feelings perspective, what has been allowed is anger, right? Anger. That's the one that's probably, but disappointment, hurt, confusion, not allowed, right? Where women have been allowed here. Mm-hmm. And this is the injustice, right? And thankfully we are changing it. But what happens is that people end up having these little things happen that become bigger things over time because they're not nipped in the bud. So mm-hmm. communication misunderstandings, no, I didn't mean that, right? I actually wrote about this in my newsletter this month, mm-hmm. Actually, that's coming out today. But just the importance of clearing up communication so that it doesn't become bigger issues, so that, you know, molehills don't become mountains.
Right. So when you talk about clearing up that conversation,
yes,
like, it's, I'm going to go back to the absence of information, you fill in the blanks. So communication sent, I think I send good communication. The receiver probably hears 60% of what I said, and then they fill in the blanks for the other 40%. And 3 days later, you go in to check on them and you're like, oh my gosh, this is not even what I expected to be going on or expected to be happening. And at that point, it's obvious that people just want to say, well, we'll just leave it be. You know, some people just walk away and hopefully they'll fix it. Right. Hopefully they'll come to realize that they're not doing it exactly the way that I want to. So what's,
and that doesn't always, right. That doesn't happen. No. And then it's so it does take that extra step, mm-hmm. right? It does take that extra step. It's that extra few minutes of saying, how are you hearing what I said, right? Mm-hmm. It's taking that to reinforce that communication was actually received, especially if you're in a leader in a management position and you're delegating something, for example, mm-hmm. right? Is, you know, I want you to do X, Y, Z. And then the person's like, okay. And then he goes off and he does it, right? No. It's that extra step would be, right? I mean, what do you think it would be?
I love the thought though, because I had that realization sitting in therapy myself 6 or 8 years ago, sitting in therapy with my wife, and she would say something and our therapist would say, what did you hear, Daniel? And I would try to regurgitate what I heard, and it's like not even close, right? Or what I heard is maybe partially what my wife was trying to tell me, or vice versa. We realized, like, exactly. It's okay to over communicate, right? It doesn't mean that I'm an idiot and I can't understand what you're telling me. I'm right. just making sure, like, hey, let's just right. double
right.
check.
Right, right, exactly. It's double checking. But it's really important how you double check. Obviously, mm-hmm. if you as a leader are saying to your, you know, like to your people, so what did you hear me say? Right. Mm-hmm. Like that is going to come off as condescending, oh, yeah. and not right. So it's not just what you say, it's how you say it. But it's like, hey, man, just to make sure that, you know, I'm being clear. Right. What did you hear? Mm-hmm. Right. So because it's not necessarily that they didn't hear you. Maybe you're not being clear. Right. So maybe in your situation, it wasn't that you're what it's just it is. There has to be that reinforcement mm-hmm. around the communication that you really, you know, and of course, as a leader and I believe we're all leaders ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
OK. It is important also that we hold ourselves accountable to saying what we mean and meaning what we say, right? Mm-hmm. Really, it's our word that we have to build trust and collaboration, right? And so we also want to make sure that what we're putting down, right, is, so there's a lot here. That's why it's thought that communication is an art, and this isn't intended to stress out people and to think, geez, all I want, right? This is just be mindful, I think, mm-hmm. and be curious about your communication, mm-hmm. right? The other thing that I've seen, and this is not unique to constructions, it's unique to human beings, right? Who communicate, who have this gift of communication. When we communicate effectively, we can move mountains.
Absolutely.
Truly. Mm-hmm. Truly. That is when we communicate, when everybody's on the same page, right? But it's also that when we may inadvertently be communicating something that we don't intend to be mm-hmm. communicating.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Sure. That makes sense.
And so to use the example we just used, right? If you are trying to make sure your communication comes across as accurate, and you're saying, tell me what you heard, right? And people are like, well, that's kind of, what, and if you frame it in the way, hey, I want to make sure that I'm being clear. It's not that I'm questioning whether you're hearing this effectively. Like, I want to make sure that I'm being clear. People really respect that, mm-hmm. right? People get accused, let's say, of micromanaging. I hear this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people are actually micromanaging.
Sure.
But sometimes they're not, actually. That's not their intent. And so, you know, as a person who wants to know the details, you can ask, hey, I'm really curious about this. It's not that I don't think you can do this, just so you know. I'm just learning from you too, right? That's a very different frame than, so yeah. what are you doing and when are you doing it, right? It's, again, in the absence of information, people will fill in the blanks. Oh, my leader doesn't believe that I can do this. That's why mm-hmm. they're man, because of course, that's why people hate micromanagement, right? Because
sure.
they think that their competence is being questioned.
But the way that you framed it about, hey, I'm learning with you, that's almost an empowering statement to your direct report or to whoever you're talking to.
Completely. Because you know what, Dano? And I have to say that at this enterprise, there is a culture of humility. Overall, mm-hmm. there really is. Mm-hmm. And we need to keep reinforcing that because there is no one that you can't learn something from.
I agree 110%, right? And everybody's gotten to their place in this enterprise because of other people spending time with them, spending time to teach them, to show them the ropes. And that's something that we talk about in our training here in Austin, is like sitting with office engineers or project engineers and assistant project managers. It's like, you're in your role because somebody trained you, right? It's up to us to continue the training. And, you know, I've heard people say, well, our engineers don't know how to do anything. It's like, it's your role to teach them. Like, are you teaching them or are you just telling them, right? Is there their teaching process and how is that working for you?
Totally. So what you're talking about is facilitation, right? Mm-hmm. And certainly facilitating development, right? Facilitating, you know, a very important role that managers and leaders have, because I do differentiate leadership from management to some degree. Mm-hmm. Although many of us, I believe everyone's a leader. Sometimes as a leader, we're managing others. Sometimes we're not. We're leading ourselves too. Ultimately, you know, I think great companies, every single person in it is a leader to some degree, right? Sure.
Leadership at every level. It's in the ethos. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But the importance of coaching, mentoring, teachers will say their greatest, right? Teachers and parents will say that their greatest, right? Their greatest teachers are their children.
Sure.
Or their students, right? So truly, the more we know, the more we know we don't know.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's that's too true for sure. I want to circle back and talk to this point that you said a minute ago about allowing feelings mm-hmm. and allowing expression, because like you said, in a male-driven industry for a long time, even when I started, it was kind of like you were just told what to do and you did what you were told, right? And even if you knew it wasn't right or knew it wasn't the correct way to do it, or maybe you were taking a shortcut and you didn't want to, it was just kind of like, hey, you just had to do it. So what do you think has allowed us as an industry to begin to think it's okay to have feelings other than anger and distress or the ability or want to always be right? What do you think has caused that shift?
Unfortunately, I think that it's the crisis, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes crisis to wake people up. And what I mean by crisis is that construction as an industry, as you know, Dano, has a high level of suicide rates. Mm-hmm. And I think people are starting to open their eyes and say, well, why is this the case? And there are different reasons for that, obviously. It's not one thing. There's a perfect storm of reasons why our industry has ended up with that number one slot, which is a slot you just don't want. But I think that we have to wake up and understand that at the end of the day, as human beings, right? Yes, we have this logos aspect to who we are. Logos meaning our minds, our brains, how we solve problems, right? We have our ethos, our values, right? But we also have our pathos. And our pathos is our feelings. We are not machines. We are human beings. And so we need to learn how to be in our feelings, mm-hmm. right? We need to be aware of what they are and also sometimes where they come from. Because sometimes we may think that we're feeling a certain way based on a communication we're having with a colleague, but it also could be based on other experiences in our lives that happened some time ago that can get triggered, right? For example, let's just take that simple example. And again, I know that there are leaders who micromanage, and I'm not going to minimize that, okay? Sure. But let's say you're in that position and you have a history of feeling like, you know, people didn't take you seriously. let's say you had parents who were, you know, who didn't make you feel like you had something to contribute.
Sure. It happens.
Unfortunately, way too much. And I don't believe parents do this on purpose. Usually they had that experience themselves. And that's how we, you know, we want to break patterns, just like, right, diseases run in families. So do modes of communication, unless we identify what they are and say, I'm going to do this differently because now I'm aware of it. And by the way, what sets up the human species to be different from animals is our ability to observe ourselves, our ability to what we call metacognition, our ability to kind of, as I said earlier, get on, right, get on the balcony and think about how we behaved in a certain exchange and how we can do things differently, right? That's where we go from being reactive to being reflective in essence, right? And reflection actually, so ironically, right, when we start becoming aware of our feelings, we and having coping strategies for dealing with those unpleasant feelings sometimes, right? And by the way, the coping strategies are way easier to implement when we've been taking care of ourselves as human beings, right? What does that mean? It means sleeping well, eating well, exercising, taking time to rest, taking time off. Rest, by the way, is not sleep. Yes, there is a part of sleep that is restful, but I also mean engaging the mind in different ways, except for what you do on a day-to-day, right? From a professional standpoint, right? That allows us to better leverage our coping skills, our coping strategies, so that when the moment comes, when we're faced with what we feel may be a saber-toothed tiger, which is actually right, someone who we feel is undermining us or questioning our capabilities, questioning our competence, questioning our commitment, right? That we can be like, okay, that is coming from that person. Don't know what's going on with that person. Let me take that feedback that, am I really hearing it correctly? And let's say I am hearing it correctly. Let me take that and think about it. I don't need to respond right away. You could say, you know what? Let me think about that. I hear that you're questioning my presence, you know, at work or whatever it is, right? Let me think about that. Let me come back to you. And you can take a minute, you know, and think about and if you're, then maybe you need to formulate some questions to ask your manager, like, so how did you come to the, right? So not in a defensive way, because defensiveness shuts down communication.
Absolutely.
Right. So, and we want to, you know, anybody who's giving feedback or, you know, wants to know that there is a kernel of truth that you're taking in that they're saying. And even if you can't respond at the moment, you could say, really, let me think about that. And taking time to be thoughtful is important, right? Because we get into trouble when we start reacting. That's when we get into trouble. When we start, you know, getting into that fight, flight, freeze mode, actually, where we think that the saber-toothed tiger is in front of us.
Right. Yeah. And it appears like it's a saber-toothed tiger and you want to, the first thing you want to do is attack, right? To protect yourself.
Of course. And it's that the brain, it's a neural, it's neurology in essence, right? It's the kind of the car, get out of the way, right? Or the tiger's going to eat you. You better like get into that self-protective mode. So again, I say that when people are taking care of themselves in general and are managing their stress levels, which takes work.
Sure.
You know, it's not sitting on the couch eating bonbons. That is not.
Although that's fun.
Although that's fun and could be a part of stress, right? But it's doing that other work, right? It's that doing that other work to keep yourself, you know, keep your stress levels in check. You know, self-care not being for the faint of heart.
Right, and self-care is huge, right? We talked about the crisis here a minute ago that you brought up about suicide and how it plagues our industry. And I think that all kind of goes back to maybe people, like you said, not being allowed to express their feelings.
Or not knowing how.
Oh, yeah.
Also.
Not knowing how and then feeling like they're pushed in a box and really not able to do what they want to do. They don't feel like they're part of a team. They don't feel like they're producing, and people don't value what they're.
They feel unvalued. They feel, and oftentimes, by the way, I really believe that people don't it's very rare that a person, that a leader, that a manager is really trying to undermine their, you know, yeah. Trying to make them feel excluded, right? Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily realizing, right, that those little things often, they build up. It's not the one-off interactions. It's the culmination of experiences that can lead a person to feel that they don't belong, which really means that they're not safe, right? We have such a huge culture of safety because without mm-hmm. physical safety, there is nothing, right? Part of my role, by the way, is really expanding that definition of safety to include psychological safety, which in essence means, right, feeling like you can ask a question or bring up an issue or give an opinion without retribution, that you're going to be punished or that you're going to be humiliated in mm-hmm. some way, shape, or form, right? That is really psychological safety, where also you can be you, right? And obviously that doesn't, you know, there are guardrails and there are boundaries in companies, in the workplace. There are things that are not acceptable in mm-hmm. terms of behavior. Not everything goes. So at the end of the day, we're still a professional environment, mm-hmm. right?
We have to be, yeah.
We have to be, right? And so, and that means professionalism in how, you know, we dress, how we communicate, how we show up, right? There are those, and they're there for a reason, but it also means that there needs to be space for authenticity, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely. I feel like there definitely does. And like you don't want to hold people back from how they feel like what they're growing into and how you can help them grow into that, which also provides that psychological safety, like you talked about. And as a leader, you've got to be in tune with your people. You got to be in tune with what their goals are. You've got to be in tune with what their B equals P plus E, right? To understand kind of maybe why they're acting the way that they're acting.
Yeah, you're in charge of the E there, mm-hmm. right? You're in charge of the environment. In
Absolutely.
Essence, right? Making sure that it's safe, whether physically or psychologically, for your people. You know, and that's not to say that, you know, I also want to acknowledge that there are difficult people, oh, right? Yeah. That as a leader, that how do you navigate those difficult conversations, and how do you have those courageous conversations? I can tell you it's a skill. Mm-hmm. We're not, yes, there are people that are, you know, naturally, for whatever reason, came to them easier, but the amazing news that I'm here to say is that communication is a skill mm-hmm. that can be learned.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I think it goes back to some of that reflection that you were talking about earlier, right? When you feel like you've communicated and somebody isn't doing what you thought they were, rather than just going up and like jumping right down their throat and telling them that they're doing it wrong and can't believe you didn't understand what I was saying, it's taking a second and reflecting on it and saying, hey, how can I approach this situation and make sure that we fill in the misinformation or what they've created? How do you fill it in with the right information where you can both leave and be happy about it, right?
Exactly. And I also want to say this, Daniel, because I think it's really, really important. The idea that we're perfect and that every conversation is going to be perfect. And I say this because enterprise-wide, there are a lot of perfectionists working here, very hardworking, like want to get it right folks. Every conversation isn't going to be perfect. And I've got more great news to tell you, right? Which is that even if you have a conversation that doesn't go as you had wanted, there is always the possibility that you can go back, hopefully, to that person and say, hey, can we revisit that, right? And that's called repair, mm-hmm. right? And difficult conversations are often not one and done. They're continuous, right? And so if a conversation doesn't go, because we're not perfect, everybody is going to have their bad days, right? Everybody. And everybody has their thing, mm-hmm. right? And this is what makes us human and interesting. And as far as I'm concerned, why we're here, which is to grow and develop and become, right? And by the way, that's what really excites me is possibility and opportunity and potential. Like those words are like my North Star, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so there is that possibility to go back and to have a better conversation.
I love the thought of that. And that goes back to this culture of humility also, right? To sometimes understand that it's okay to go back and say, hey, maybe I wasn't right about this, or hey, let's revisit this, right? And that's, it's something that's huge. And as a leader, having that good communication and having the open door where somebody can come back in and say, hey, maybe I didn't understand this correctly, or you can go back and start the repair process. I think it's huge. I think it's something that should flourish. And it's a small part of kind of what we have at this point. We're trying to say that, hey, it's okay, right? We understand it's everything's not going to be perfect. And everybody here wants to be, and we're all unit producers and we're all trying to push in one direction, but we got to understand that, hey, sometimes if you get off course, it's okay to come back and say, hey, maybe I was wrong. Or let's take a look at this one more time before we get all the way down the road.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a process, and encouraging people to have that. Mm-hmm. And even going back and say, hey man, when you said that, what did you mean? You know, and being curious, I think that one of the things that actually helps defensiveness, which can be, you know, a big communication derailer, is curiosity and inquiry, right? Because it's really hard to be both curious and defensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're curious, right, it just opens up the conversation. And the reality is that their conflict is, and I wrote about this month, right? Like, it is a part of the closest of relationships, right? People are going to have different opinions about which way to go, how to do something. And so at the end of the day, we really need, like, a human skill is learning how to navigate that conflict.
I love the thought about conflict is okay, because
it's actually, I believe it's essential for innovation, actually.
Yeah, you have to have that. If you just think about having a relationship with, whether it's your significant other or even your kids or something like that, it's nobody wants to just do what the other person tells them all the time, or just be a victim of whatever the decision of this person that doesn't like conflict and just says, hey, we're going to do this today. And it's like, okay, well, it's not really what I wanted to do, but I guess we'll do it. But at the same time, it's kind of like, you got to be able to say, hey, this isn't really the way I would look at it. Can we look at it from this, look at it through this lens, or look at it this way? And you have those good relationships where the conflict is okay. It's allowed, right? And you can go
back
and forth. Yeah.
Because when conflict is avoided, sometimes it can, over time, really result in disconnect and disengagement, right? So as a couples psychologist, which was actually my clinical niche, believe it or not, right? I would always say I would rather work with a high conflict couples than the couples who hadn't had a fight in a year.
Yes.
Because there's such a level of disengagement. It's really harder to bring people to the table, right? When they avoid, mm-hmm. right? And that, than it is, at least in conflict, there's engagement, mm-hmm. right? And oftentimes in conflict, right, when people get gridlocked, right, it's important that we get at the underlying values of what that gridlock represents, right? So if it's like, I want to go left, I want to go right. No, I think we should go left. I think we should go right. That's a terrible idea to go right. What does going right represent? What are the values behind, like, what are you holding for, and what does going left represent to you? When we can go deeper in our conversations, and then the other skill, of course, is being mindful of that tone, right? Like how we say things, and making sure that that tone isn't condescending, or, you know, I know better, you don't know what you're talking about, or like highfalutin, whatever it is. It needs to be, it needs to be a respectful tone is what I'm saying, right?
Oh yeah, I get it. I get it completely. And by having the conflict early on, it keeps you from distancing from somebody, and being able to address it right now. And then you understand, hey, there's going to be some give and take in the relationship. There's going to be some give and take in whatever it is in this process.
Right.
And then you allow the other person or the group to say, hey, we can come back if we don't feel like this is the right path. And being able to listen also, right? And say, hey, as the leader or as the operations person over this group, you got to be willing to listen when your people want to speak up. You got to be willing to let them challenge you and say, hey, you know, maybe I'm not the smartest person in the room, right? And we can have an example, or we can have an idea from somebody. I remember on a job years ago, we were in the midst of a huge issue, and we got everybody in the room and we sat down and we talked through all the different possibilities of how to solve the problem on the job. It was at Chilling Station 7, how we were going to solve it.
Yeah.
And we sat there, and the superintendents, myself, and yes, our project engineer, and the youngest guy on the team, Charlie Brackman. Charlie works in Denver. Charlie spoke up and goes, well, what if we did it like this? And we all went, that's brilliant. Charlie, like, how did we not think of that? You're right. That's definitely the path forward. And then we began as a group to say, hey, well, if we did that, yeah, it would totally work. And then we implemented it, right? And then at the same time, Charlie's going, wow, I'm actually part of the team. I'm not just being told what to do, and I have to listen to what Dano or Brant tell me every day. I can actually provide some input. And then all of a sudden, he belongs, right? And then he wants to come every day, and he wants to put out and get a great, you know, great input for the team and do a good job for us.
Exactly. Exactly. And sometimes that more novice perspective, because they're on the outside of it, right, mm-hmm, can really add value. At the same time, though, every single person on the team needs to know, I believe, that they are valued. And there is no smartest. This mm-hmm is the thing about smart. There are many different kinds of smart in the world, and really it takes a team to make rain. Mm-hmm. And although obviously there is a unifier, right, of a kind of smart that we do look for here, right, at the end of the day, people have their different superpowers, as I like to say. You know, and this is right. And again, I appreciate competition, and I appreciate all that stuff, right, that can happen in teams, and it can be healthy. But at the end of the day, we need to remember that we're one team, mm-hmm, and that there is room for everybody. When there's a feeling that there isn't enough room, for example, the example that you gave, with, you know, the novice giving the input. If a senior member of the team felt, you know, I haven't been listened to lately, my ideas don't really matter, mm-hmm, right? At the end of the day, that could affect, it's only the new ideas that, right, somebody could make up that story. We have to remember that everybody needs recognition, right? I mean, some would say, I don't want recognition. It makes me feel, and there are absolutely people like that feel very uncomfortable when they're being recognized. We as leaders need to figure out, how do we recognize those people without, you know, making them feel uncomfortable? And there are ways of doing that. But we do need to celebrate our people. Mm-hmm. Because by the way, when we celebrate our people and when we recognize performance, right, having those difficult conversations becomes much easier, having those courageous conversations, because we've built up the emotional bank account with our folks. And so if we're really only identifying times when people aren't performing or ways of improvement, that's not going to go over real well, right? Science, people don't like this when I tell them this. Science says that we actually need a 5-to-1 ratio. Mm. So for every one negative exchange, we need 5. Even as psychologists, we were like, maybe 3-to-1, but 5-to-1? Are you kidding me? Because it's a lot, right? Right? It's a lot. So catching people, right? And again, it's not about like, it has to be authentic. It's like, you're not just saying, and by the way, even positive feedback needs to be specific, right? It's like, oh, you did a great job. It's like, what the heck does that mean? But yeah, when somebody says like, this is what was great about it, mm-hmm, right? You did this, that, and the other, and that's what made it great. People feel seen.
The 5-to-1 ratio is mind blowing to me. Like, just kind of like you were saying, like, is it really like 3? But when you think about it, it's kind of like if somebody's telling you, hey, in the meeting today, you did a great job addressing RFI 602, or you did a great job addressing.
And here's why.
Exactly. Or your trade partner was getting out of hand and you did a great job keeping it on keel and answering the question and not answering the attack.
It's like you kept your calm, you focused on the question, not the emotions that were coming at you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden the person that's your direct report or on your team is like, hey, I'm being noticed. Hey, I'm being valued. And it makes sense that it is five, because sometimes the one is pretty tough to take, right? And it can't be five over the last 4.5 months and then you get blasted. It's kind of like, hey, can I get like maybe one every 2 weeks or maybe one?
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be like face, like you could send texts, you could send emails, you can think about the exchanges that you've had with people, certainly, and mm-hmm. what you've seen them and how you've seen them and the meaning that, and it is very meaningful for people, right? Well, to hear that.
Well, I think it's hard in our industry also because we're all performers and we all want to do a good job. And I've sat down and looked at, you know, project award submittals, and you're sitting with the marketing folks and they're like, hey, tell me where you went above and beyond. And it's like, why don't we just do what it took to get the job done? Right. But then your vice president or whoever your area manager's in there. And they're like, no, when you guys did this and this and this, it's kind of like, oh, I didn't even think of that as going above and beyond. So even as a leader, you have to have that time of reflection to see where your people have stepped out and stepped up.
Exactly.
So I've written down some things as we've gone through here about really how to optimize yourself, your people, the whole person, right? How to optimize so we can all be a part of that high-performing team. Some of the things I wrote down was challenging your assumptions. I love what you said about that. And as a team, or even as a leader, assuming something, it's like, hey, go ask, right? It's super easy. Go ask. Or, hey, let's get some input from somebody else and let them play a part in this.
I wrote, and you know what, assume, right? Break it down.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, right? I do. I learned that really young so I could say a bad word.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
One of the other things I wrote down was allowing your feelings, or allow feelings to be expressed, right? And whether you're the team leader or whether you're just a person on the team, allowing other people to express what's going on, right? And if it's something that's from a job site perspective, let's get it addressed. But also if it's something from a personal perspective, hey,
it's
let's
impacting.
Yeah, hey, let's figure out a way to get you some of that rest. Let's figure out a way to get you some time, right? We're given vacation time. We're given sick days, all these kind of things. All the, you know, you get half a day off every 2 weeks. We have all we have all these opportunities. Let's take them, right? We've got a team. We'll stand in the gap for 2 days, let you take some time off. The other thing I wrote down, well, there's a handful here, is...
And just to that point, I just want to say, you know, I mean, think about athletes, right? Yep. It's really important as part of athletic performance, right? That there are intervals of rest, because that positively impacts performance, mm-hmm. right? And so rest helps us become more efficient and effective, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
It's not like a nice to have. It actually can help get work done mm-hmm. more completely. And it helps us. It helps us stay balanced. It's mm-hmm. a very important piece of performance.
Yeah. And as a leader, being able to recognize that in your team, saying, hey, I see you're only operating at 70%. Like, if you didn't have to work another Saturday, like, if you took Saturday off, would that help you be at 100% all the next week? A couple other things I wrote down is about recognition, right? And the 5-to-1 ratio. Like, if you want to have a high performing team, you got to understand, to have some of that conflict, you got to have some of that buildup also. You got to make deposits into the emotional bank account. Yeah, the emotional bank account, right? I'm always ready for a deposit there. Yeah, just keep them coming.
Yeah. I mean, again, it has to be authentic. It has to be real. But, you know, that's also, you know, when we're connected, mm-hmm. right? Not only do we perform better, but it actually is so good for our well-being, mm-hmm. right? Relationships are very, very important for physical and emotional health.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to feel like you're part of a team, right? You need to make sure you're part of the team. You make sure you're bringing your people in, that they belong, so they're going to perform for you. And you're going to have one of these high-performing teams like you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah.
Reflection. I wrote down also, that's something I could do a lot better. I can't tell you how many interviews I've watched on Instagram or heard about in sermons at church when they say, we went to the nursing home and interviewed 75, 85-year-old people. What was the thing they should have done more? And every one of them says reflection. And it's like, as a leader, even as a teammate, even for you young project engineers that are listening, take time to reflect. Take time to reflect on how the week went, how your day went, how your conversations went, and really how you can be better, right? And if the communication's not coming across, reflect on what you could do to be a better communicator.
Right. And sometimes, by the way, you know, it could mean asking people, right? And really, you know, your allies are the ones that are going to be honest with you and say, hey, man, when you showed up, you know, an hour late, that's really communicate something to the team, right? Or whatever it is, mm-hmm. right? And people know when it's coming from a good place as opposed to, right? So let me differentiate between like criticism, right? So mm-hmm. criticism is about somebody does something and you make it about them as a person, like you're irresponsible, you're lazy, there's a connotation. So when you're giving feedback, right, it's important to make it about the behavior and not about the person. Mm. So you're focusing on, you know, hey, you know, when you show up late, right, it communicates different things to different people, right? It's important. Be aware of that, whether you mean it or not, right? You're not giving your, and this also has to do with in personal relationships, right? Focus on the behavior, not the person.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. And
that's a tool.
Well, yeah. And being able, that was the next thing I wrote down is the B equals P plus E, right? And you ought to understand yeah. what the P is every time. If you're a leader, you ought to understand who your people are and kind of what's going on in their lives and be checking in with them.
And what motivates them to, yeah. what motivates them to, I think people often ask me like, how do I know? I mean, when you know your people, you know when there's a change in behavior.
Absolutely.
Right? That's the flag, right? Mm-hmm. If somebody's been one way for a really long time and all of a sudden they're not.
Right. What's going on? Hey, yeah. And be willing to talk about it and have made enough deposits in that bank account that when you go to talk to them about it, they're willing to talk to you back, right?
Exactly.
And you've established a rapport. They're willing to come back and say, hey, this is what's going on. And you're going, oh my gosh, your environment's all out of whack. Let's figure out a way to fix the environment so we can get the behavior back that we want, right? Exactly. I love it.
Yep.
The last thing I wrote down was, your best friend is repair, right? And that's humility also. And like understanding, like it's okay to come back and say, hey, we're going to do better next time. Or, hey, I'm going to change this about my communication style. Or I'm going to change this about the environment we're creating here that's causing this behavior that I don't like.
Exactly.
And then effective leaders are flexible, right? And remember about being flexible and remember that there are other voices, there are other people that have opinions that could shape the way the environment's going to be, that's going to shape everybody's behavior. So,
yeah. You said something last night that, mm-hmm. you know, I think you and Tim, you know, in listening to you, it's like when you keep something inside, it really eats. It can eat for a lot. It can eat away at you. It affects your health. It can mm-hmm. affect all sorts of things. And once you bring it out, right, it can, and communicate it, it can really take a weight off,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially if it's communicated effectively.
Yeah.
And that's the start of a shift,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's when we get in touch, back to my favorite words,
mm-hmm.
with possibility
oh, yeah.
and potential.
Those are those big, and opportunity, right?
Yes.
Those are all
yes,
big words.
Yes, yes.
And eventually they're going to be the North Star of all of us, right? Mm. If we're going to go from good to great, for sure. Karen, it's been awesome having you on today. I've thoroughly
awesome
enjoyed our
here.
Conversation. I'm super excited that you're here at the Enterprise, and I can't wait to see how we're going to grow into the future and be better and produce these great teams.
I'm super excited to have you as a colleague, Dana.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for being on today.
Thank you. It's been such a long